Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued.
You've brought us a really reflective and compelling piece today. It's a blog post, The Magic of Shadows, part 4 of the Evernight series from the Church of Tinkerbell. And it feels less like, you know, a sermon and more like a deep philosophical reflection.
It absolutely is. And I think what's valuable here right off the bat is how it jumps past simple instruction. It goes straight into these deep internal contemplative ideas.
Right.
We're really looking at a guided internal journey framed by their core ideas.
Yeah.
Radical kindness, whimsy, glitter, love, laugh, question.
And that foundation feels important because our mission here is to unpack its central argument, which is, well, it's a bit counterintuitive, isn't it?
It is.
That darkness and mystery aren't this negative absence, but actually an essential, fertile presence. For most of us, that's a complete flip.
That's exactly the point. I mean, we're sort of conditioned to equate knowing with safety, right? Mm-hmm. And the unknown feels like danger. What's fascinating here is how the text suggests we should intentionally choose to engage with that unseen world. You know, the spaces where certainty just ends and imagination begins.
Okay, let's dig into that. The value of the half-seen. The source actually calls it the beauty of the half-seen.
Yes.
Suggesting there's a holiness in the half-lit world.
That ambiguous space, you mean, where light and shadow meet.
Exactly, where things are neither fully out in the open nor completely hidden. And the distinction they draw between light and dark is, well, it's the core tool here, philosophically speaking.
How so?
They state it very clearly. Light shows us what is there. Darkness teaches us that there is more.
Yeah.
So darkness isn't just a lack of information. It's presented as a kind of guarantee of potential.
Mm-hmm.
There's more there.
That's really provocative, especially because, you know, we live in a culture that's pretty obsessed with visibility.
Totally.
We want the data, we demand transparency, and we're kind of told, if you can't measure it or drag it into the spotlight, it doesn't count. Or worse, it's suspicious. And that's precisely the pressure they're pushing back against. This modern need for, like, total clarity.
Right.
The text directly challenges that need to drag every secret into the daylight until every secret is explained. It suggests that chasing that kind of clinical certainty, it often diminishes the wonder. It can actually prevent internal growth.
Okay, but let me just push back for a second there.
Yeah.
Practically speaking, you know, in the real world,
yeah.
If we stop seeking clarity, how do we maintain ethical boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't safety, accountability often require knowing what's going on?
That's a really vital question. And the source isn't advocating for willful ignorance or dodging responsibility. Not at all.
Okay.
It seems much more focused on the internal life, self-perception. It's saying when you apply that relentless need for certainty to yourself, to your own doubts, your unfinished thoughts, those fragile parts, you often end up crushing the very process of becoming. It's more about accepting that your inner map might always be, well, partly incomplete, and that's actually okay.
So if the half-seen is considered holy, then we have to face what we usually fear most. Mystery itself.
Exactly. And that leads us right into the heart of this philosophy. Treating mystery not as some kind of defect, but as perhaps a defining characteristic.
A feature, not a bug.
Precisely. They ask us to consider, what if mystery isn't a flaw in our knowledge, but a feature of the world's design?
That changes everything, doesn't it? It reframes that whole search for ultimate answers as maybe even counterproductive.
It really does. And mystery is described so beautifully as the quiet breathing of something sacred that thrives only when left unnamed.
Mm.
It implies that the moment you try to pin that sacred thing down, label it definitively, the breathing stops. The life kind of leaves the concept.
And this is where they use that fantastic analogy. It grounds this a really high-level idea in something, well, utterly familiar, the jack-o'-lantern image.
Yes, the partnership. It's perfect. The flickering candle inside the pumpkin.
Mm.
It doesn't fight the darkness outside. It partners with it.
Mm.
You actually need that vast, consuming darkness of the night for the little light to mean anything.
And vice versa, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah. They dance together, light and shadow, and they give each other meaning.
We're usually taught, though, aren't we, that the goal is to eliminate the dark, shine the light until the darkness just vanishes. Mm-hmm. But the source suggests life itself is this partnership between knowing and not knowing. That sounds, honestly, a bit exhausting, always being in that in-between space.
It probably can be, if you're fighting it constantly, but if we connect this to the bigger picture, like internal work, it's more about accepting the totality of yourself.
Okay.
That includes the part that, you know, strides confidently into the sun, but also the part that lingers curious and trembling in the dusk.
Mm.
And when we allow ourselves to stop trying to fix or eliminate or even apologize for that dusk part, that's when the mystery becomes fertile, becomes alive. You're letting the unfinished parts breathe.
It sounds like the difference between trying to solve a problem versus appreciating a paradox. It really does require a shift in how we view our own story.
And to help anchor that feeling, the source then moves from the abstract philosophy to something very specific, an emotional touch point. That's section 3, the story vignette, the candle and the curtain.
Ah, yes. Storytelling really is the best tool for this kind of subtle insight, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The setting is so classic, deeply evocative. This old house, end of the lane, single candle burning in the parlor window.
And importantly, the source gives context to that light, doesn't it? It carries whispers, maybe it guides travelers, maybe it belongs to someone who had never left.
Right, so it's wrapped in mystery from the start. Mm-hmm. Hope or memory, maybe both.
Exactly. The light is already weighted by the unknowns around it.
And then the core moment happens, seen through a child's eyes, watching that candle, a shadow cross the window.
Mm-hmm.
But the description of the shadow, that's what makes it so powerful. It wasn't just a physical thing passing by.
That's the key. The text is explicit. Not a person, not exactly. More like a memory given shape.
Wow.
The kind of form your mind makes when it wants a story more than it wants an answer. It's pure intuition crystallized, your brain prioritizing narrative, meaning, over just objective fact.
That perfectly captures what we're talking about, prioritizing that inner non-measurable life and the shadow's response.
Mm-hmm.
It's this quiet, almost respectful acknowledgement. It seemed to bow.
That bow is the validation, I think. The child feels their heart is thrilling and tender, realizing that this memory shadow sees them, acknowledges the light they're watching.
Yeah.
And the child's takeaway is simple but revolutionary. Not everything sacred shines. Some things shimmer best in the dark.
Mm.
It validates that whole internal landscape, the quiet knowing, the intuition we often dismiss for hard certainty.
So we've moved from this grand concept of mystery down to a small, intimate moment of validation. And that acceptance feels like the pivot point into the final section, right? Moving from belief to actual practice. Meeting your own shadow.
Exactly. This is where the source offers real utility, something you can actually do. It takes the abstract idea of honoring the bark and gives you a mechanism to start practicing it.
The activity itself sounds straightforward. Find a quiet, dimly lit space, literally where light meets dark, and just sit with yourself.
Mm.
It's about creating a space for observation, not immediate action, it seems.
And this is where we can bring in a bit of psychological context. You know, when people hear shadow work, they often think of confronting deep flaws, painful memories.
Right, like Jungian shadow work. Mm. Can be quite intense.
It can be. Necessary, but sometimes confrontational. But the approach here, from the Church of Tinkerbell, it feels distinctly gentle.
Yes, the focus seems to be on curiosity, not conflict. And then it gives 3 reflective questions to ask yourself in that dimly lit space, framing it as searching for fragility, not fault.
They're really powerful self-compassion prompts. Let's look at the first one. What parts of me do I keep hidden, not because they're bad, but because they are fragile or unfinished?
That immediately reframes it, doesn't it?
Right.
Removes the guilt. You're not hiding something evil. You're protecting something delicate.
Exactly. That's a huge distinction. We hide things because we're afraid they'll break if they're exposed, not always because they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the second question follows logically. What do I fear might happen if I let them be seen? This gets at the root anxiety, fear of rejection, misunderstanding, maybe fear that others will demand those parts be fixed.
And then the crucial third step, moving towards acceptance. Can I imagine holding those hidden parts gently, like soft creatures of the dusk deserving curiosity, not judgment? That image, soft creatures, really drives home the tenderness.
It really does. It steps back from typical psych language about integration and uses language emphasizing care. Uh-huh. The source is very clear. The goal isn't to fix your shadow. It's specifically to befriend it.
Befriend it.
Yeah. Recognizing that your wholeness includes the things you can't fully define yet or the parts still growing, that feels like where real self-acceptance starts.
It's such a holistic view of the self. And it seems to mirror the broader focus of the organization itself, looking at their other topics. This kind of nuanced acceptance feels vital.
It really is. And this contemplative focus on accepting complexity, it fits perfectly with their other resources, doesn't it? You see categories discussing complex, often non-binary topics like psychology, mental health, ethical non-monogamy, life on the spectrum.
Right.
These are all areas where simple black and white answers just fail. Where learning to live comfortably in the dusk, so to speak, is often necessary for well-being.
So this deep dive has really been a journey into a worldview that fundamentally values unknowing, doesn't it?
Hmm.
It's an encouragement to move past the fear of what we can't control or define, and instead maybe let mystery be a teacher in our lives.
And that acceptance of the pause, you know, the quiet moment after the knowing, that's its own kind of deep dive.
Okay, so here's a final provocative thought for you, the listener, to carry into your own shadowed spaces. The next reflection in this Evernight series is actually teased right there in the source. The silence between heartbeats. Think about what happens in that crucial momentary pause. The quiet that follows the dance after the revelry stops, and maybe something inside you just begins to listen. Where might that silence lead you when you're just present waiting for the next beat? Thanks for going on this little adventure with me today.
Anytime.
And listener, keep sprinkling that fairy dust, all right? We'll see you next time.